a lot of people, even some who are working, find it difficult to make ends meet. More than half of the families in America live paycheck to paycheck. There was a survey recently which I thought told a very telling story about family income. More than half of the people in America who are working say that they could not come up with $2,000 in 30 days, which is an indication of limited amounts of savings and very few places to turn to borrow money. And that is a desperate situation for many families. For many of those families, the pantries and food banks provide food, but also provide some relief and income for these people. And I've visited them all over the state. The debate now in Washington about the deficit usually starts with two words: cut spending. And I understand that. Certainly that is one of the components that's necessary to bring down our debt and our annual deficits, both of which are not sustainable for long-term economic growth. But when you talk about cutting spending, the purpose of coming together this morning is to remind everyone that we have a critically important safety net in America, that there are many, many vulnerable people in America, some vulnerable because of physical or mental disability, some vulnerable by age, others by station in life and poverty, and some just by the fact that, try as they might in a tough economy, they can't find a job to sustain themselves. So we need to do our best to make sure that we maintain America's safety net. And that includes the food stamp program, now known as the SNAP program, which has grown in size as more hungry people have turned to it. It includes the food assistance, which we give to food depositories and to food banks, an enormous, amazing effort by individuals and volunteering through their churches and through other organizations. We need to make sure that we keep this viable and alive, even as we talk about cutting spending. So I asked to come by to have Jim tell us a little bit with his friends and colleagues what is going on here in the East Central Illinois region. And I'd like to give Senator Frerichs an opportunity to say a word or two and then turn it over to Jim to open it up to those who've gathered.
I just want to say thank you all for being here today, for allowing me to be part of this. Jim has been great to work with over the years. We've worked on a lot of different issues with the state in terms of legislation. Really a yeoman's work here and a great asset for this community. And I want to thank everyone for the role they play.
Thanks, Mike. Jim, tell us about our friends who have gathered here and what's going on.
Well, East Illinois Food Bank serves 14 counties in this part of the state. We provide food to 100,000 different individuals each year. But we couldn't do that without our network of pantries and soup kitchens and shelters, 85% of which are run by volunteers. And without that component, we could not do what we do. The beautiful thing about food banking is that it is a very much of a community-based organization, whether it's in Chicago or if it's in Urbana, Illinois. It is run by the people within the community. It is funded by them. Then the funding that we do get through the USDA Commodity Program and TFAP become the thing that makes the big difference at the end. It's the end run kind of thing. So we rely on that. We appreciate your work, Senator, over the years on that and your friendship toward food banking in this state. But I think the best thing to do today is to listen to the stories of where it actually happened. So Mike and Terry are joining us today. They've graciously consented to come in. They're clients of food pantries to talk about their experience with food pantries, and then Andy and Paula from the Vineyard and from the community center, the community service center in Rantoul.
Okay. Good. Mike, why don't you start off? Mike Shorten, tell us a little bit about how you deal with or how you come to visit this.
Just appreciate you caring, Dick. Really do. And you, Mike. Okay. But my wife and I used to make around $60,000 a year, and my wife lost her job in August of 08, and I lost my job in September of 08. And we spent all of our life savings trying to hang on and pay our bills, and finally we had to go bankrupt, and we lost $35,000 or $40,000 in equity in our home, and by then all of our savings were gone. Now we're trying to survive on $1,517 a month in Social Security. That's the only income we've got. Without you guys, we just couldn't make it.
So you participate in a food pantry, or you come here? How do you access the resources that they have?
We go to St. Patrick's and the Lutheran Church there at Prospect in Springfield. They're just wonderful people.
Have you got to know some of the people that are going there with you?
We've tried to volunteer to help there, and they said they'd call us if they need some, but we're just so grateful to these people. You go there, you just don't have much self-esteem. A man that can't take care of his wife just doesn't feel like one. And I was so self-conscious. Just felt like I didn't deserve it when I went there. Just wasn't raised that way to depend on others. I was raised to depend on myself, take care of myself. That's what a man does. But they treat you like you're royalty. They don't treat you like you're some kind of deadbeat and trying to live off of them. They treat you with dignity and respect. And
still looking for work?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
In the last 3 years, my wife and I have probably put in 200 or 300 applications. We don't even get a call for an interview.
How old are you, Mike?
65.
Just a kid. I'm older than you are. So nothing wrong with being 65, but that's from my point of view. When it comes to finding a job, it's a challenge, I bet.
Right, right.
Thanks for telling your story.
Thank you.
Terry, can you pull that over?
I'm Terry Daniels. I only recently have been approved through SNAP. I work full-time. I work with special needs children in the school district. I love my job. I'm needed, and I feel like I make a difference. But I'm also a single mom of a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old. And as much as I love my job, it doesn't pay our monthly expenses. And by monthly expenses, I mean utilities and food and property tax. And that's it. I don't have any debt. I've done everything I can possibly do to keep us from having any debt. I felt like I've done everything in my life. I've served our country. I'm an Air Force veteran. I've got a degree. I have a full-time job. I never thought that I would qualify for anything, mostly because I've just worked so hard. I just thought that I've just tried not to need help. But when it comes to choosing between paying some bills and getting healthy food for your children, you have to suck it up sometimes and talk to people. My kids and I have volunteered before and have packed food boxes through our church during the holidays, and have received a few things during the holidays from our church. We've been very fortunate. And then just like a month ago, I was introduced to a gal from SNAP, Jessica Simpson, through a new program at our church called the Hope Center, where they're helping families that have needs in our church. And I just honestly told her I didn't think I would qualify because I work full time. I pay my bills, and I feel like we're not desperate, but I was feeling desperate inside and anxiety inside. She was so positive. I left there that night with an appointment to meet her the next day, and I have a more positive outlook for us than I have had in the longest time. I didn't realize how depressed and how I felt stuck, because I love my job, I love being with my children, but I need to make more money. And so it's the give and take. And the next day I met with her and was shocked to find out that I did qualify. And then I got a link card, and it is going to make a difference for me and my children like you wouldn't believe. I went out, I called her to ask her if it could be this easy, because I had heard so many horror stories about you go into agencies and they're not nice. And I didn't want to leave someplace feeling worse than when I went in. And I didn't. I felt hopeful and positive. And I thought, even if I don't get assistance with this, I just felt good after speaking with her. And then I did get assistance. I called her up and she said, yes, it's for real. you can use it. And I did. I went right out and got a whole grocery cart of fresh fruits and vegetables for my kids. And I looked at the prices and I compared and I got a lot of food because that's what I usually do. But I realized that I could get them things that they had wanted, that just fruits and vegetables that they had wanted that I were too expensive, or I felt was too expensive. And went home, and now I have healthy snacks for my kids all the time. And I feel like we're going to make it. We're going to make it, and we have a good future. And it's just lifted some of the weight so that I can see beyond the fog that I was in of just surviving to actually move forward and see a future for us that's different than what we're having. And I see that we're just in a season. I don't want to have this assistance forever. I never wanted it. But this is the season of life that we're in. And we're going to get through this. And with this help, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So.
Paula, what's interesting is listening to Mike and Terry, who have needed help, mm-hmm. but have also volunteered to help.
Yes.
That's great. I mean, it tells a story that these are not people who want to be dependent people. They want to have their own lives, and they want to help others. Mm-hmm. So tell me from the Covenant, Vineyard Church, tell us what's going on there in terms of your activities for this.
Well, we do run a pantry, and one of the things that we started doing last July, just a year ago in July, was running, in addition to the morning, a nighttime pantry to serve. Not that we require families to have a job to come between 5 and 6, but so that they could stop by after work and be able to utilize the pantry. And we've had a number of people come by. One was a security guard, and we thought for sure she was somebody important in the government because she had a little American eagle and all these things on her uniform. So we thought, oh, this must be, you know, somebody coming to inspect us. And it turned out to be a client who worked as a security guard. But these are people who very much like Terry, are in a temporary spot where they need some help. They don't anticipate being there forever, but they need that extra help right now in order to continue to produce and in order to make the difference between what their job is paying and what their family needs.
How often do your clients come in? I mean, is it limited?
Our clients come in once a month because we have severe parking issues where we're at. So,
By appointment? Or?
No, they come by when they can't, you know, whenever they want to during our hours, and then we also have coordinated a schedule with other pantries so by the day, so that if it's not their turn to come to our pantry, they can go to one like St. Pat's that Mike mentioned, or Grace Lutheran, or some of the other pantries in town. It's by day and what pantry's open, so we'll assist them in doing that too. We would love to be able to serve them every week, but we don't want an automobile accident to happen and undo the good that we did with the food.
Thanks, Paul. So, Andy, tell us about Rantoul. What's going on there?
Well, first of all, Senator, thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to talk to you about the needs of the population in our neck of the woods. Rantoul has survived a base closure, has done a lot to redevelop the properties of the old base, but also suffered from factory closures over the last 3 to 4 years, plus the economy on a downturn certainly hasn't helped any. The thing that I've heard more so in the last two and a half years is just what Terry was saying, people saying, I never thought I'd come through your office and ask for help, but here's my story. And we hear all sorts of stories, most of them related to jobs, losing jobs, mm-hmm. Illnesses in the family, just major life catastrophes that all of a sudden beset a family, and they find themselves, they either pay the rent or buy food, they can't do both. Our pantry feeds around 500 households a month. We're one of the few pantries that's open 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. So we do quite a bit of high volume. But again, people can only come to our pantry once a month. because of the cost of the food and the volume. So we also refer like to Vineyard and other pantries.
And
so people
use our schedule.
Exactly. Exactly. So we work together. We realize people can't exist by just using one pantry that helps them once a month. People that are in dire straits like that need more assistance than that. Our agency also does information referrals, so we try to connect them with other organizations. If there are other issues that the family's facing, we try to connect them with the right organization. We really rely on Jim and the Eastern Illinois Food Bank for much of our supplies, and especially their food mobile program, where we can get a truck full of food, do a one-shot distribution, take care of about 150 households in a matter of two and a half hours with extra food.
So let me ask you, Terry made a big point, an important point, about fresh fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
How much of what you process through here and through the pantries would be perishables like that?
Probably. The food bank gets what they can. We get those from them. But we also have connections with local farmers. So we get extra produce that people grow in their gardens. And individuals from around the community just bring over tomatoes, zucchini. So we have probably maybe 10, 15% of what we do is fresh produce. And we try to encourage that.
Yes, we pick up Wednesday mornings, 8 o'clock, from the food bank to get as much bread and produce. And then we also go to the local Muhammad IGA, helps us by donating produce. It's not as fresh as what you can go to your car, you know, get from the link card always, but for instance, there's a spot on this apple. Well, they can't sell it, but it doesn't mean it's not good and a family can't use it. So, you know, as soon as it turns over, we're picking it up and we're getting it out to families. And the food bank not only makes produce available and bread available for free to agencies, but they've helped us to make some of those connections so that it doesn't sit on the shelf for a day in between. It's being picked up that morning, an hour later, it's being handed out at a pantry. So that
Jim,
makes a difference.
Tell me about the volume of food that is moving through this warehouse in Eastern Illinois Depository.
Well, in 2004, we were distributing about 4.3 million pounds of food. That's about 6 years ago. This year, we distributed 6.8 million pounds, headed for 7 million this next year. It's dramatically changed. The kind of food that now comes through here is far more nutritionally dense. We've mentioned produce. We distributed 850,000 pounds of produce this year. That's 11% of our total volume. We'd like for that to go to 15 to 20%. We served at one time in 2004 about 23,000 people each month. That's averaging now 47,000 people a month.
So doubled.
It's doubled in 5 years, in 6 years. So it's been an, but we've kept up with the food. We've purchased more food than we used to. For the last 3 years, the amount of food that we've got from the USDA commodity program has been outstanding. We got 1.8 million pounds this last year. The year before that, about 1.2. The year before that, 1.6. In 2008, when the recession started, we only got 600,000 pounds. Unfortunately, this year we're headed back to receiving between 600,000 and 800,000 pounds. So it made a big, big difference the first from 2008 until now. And our commodity agencies, and our agencies start depending on that nutritionally dense food. So those volumes keep going up, and we've gotten very creative. Of course, we belong to the network of the 8 food banks in Illinois, mm-hmm. and the network across the country of the 206 food banks from Feeding America, and it taps us into those programs. Mm-hmm. But it's about fresh food, and extraordinary food should be available to everybody, regardless of what the price is.
You mentioned at the outset that you were helping soup kitchens and
yes.
feeding areas like that. So can tell me a little bit more. Do they get help as well from restaurants and others, caterers that may have food that otherwise would not be used?
They do. The University of Illinois, for example, through their dorm program, the leftover food is given to a couple of the shelters in this community. and they drop that off or somebody picks that up on a daily basis. There are other prepared agencies that prepare food that provide that. We don't pick that up because we're not equipped to do that, but we try to link those people up with those agencies.
Right.
And there's about 180,000 meals a month provided through those programs.
Mike, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, I had a question. Have you been to the Urbana Farmers Market to use your link card? Because we have an exciting new program this year.
Glad you asked, because I wanted to make this point. I was reading about the SNAP program and the benefits of having the link and what you can use it on and what you can't use it on. And I noticed that I can buy seeds to plant a garden, which the kids and I have tried to grow a garden every year, and we have gotten better and better at it, and we're always excited about something that is on the vine. And now I can use that to grow food, so I can spend a small amount of my link money to provide numerous salads for us, or pumpkins, or just you know, it just makes our family excited about being able to grow something. And then I also noticed that I can use my link money at the farmers market, at the Urbana Farmers Market. And we love to go there, but I just couldn't always buy what I would like to, the organic and the fresh vegetables. And I noticed that I can trade in money and get tokens that are dollar amounts to spend at the vendors at the farmers market. So not only am I getting fresh vegetables for my kids, but I'm also spending it locally. I am giving it back to the community. So I feel so good about that, because I'm actually helping another family, because these are not big corporations. These are usually small farms or farmers or dairies that are selling their goods, and they're like me, they're just trying to make it. But it's going to stay local if I spend it there. And that was a benefit that tomorrow morning, if it doesn't rain, we're going to the farmer's market. Maybe even if it does rain, we're going to the farmer's market.
We a new program should be able to double basically your money at the farmer's market.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, then we will be there this weekend. Get the most for our money. Right. It will be worth it. It will be worth it. My kids love to see everything that's available and and see other people's work. It's exciting, and it's just a happy atmosphere, even if it's raining. And so, and it's also a family outing that I can afford, because it's free. So there's musicians and there's art, and there's so much to see that it's like taking the kids to an amusement park, but affordable.
Yeah,
and local.
Like, personally, I've got a daughter who's 2.5 years old. I know we have someone here who likes to take his daughter there. And on Saturday morning, we go to the farmer's market.
They love it.
They like it.
And they're learning so many lessons about saving and saving our planet and helping others and just so many, recycling. They're just learning so much by going there, and I don't even have to try. It's just there for them. So it's I'm teaching them lessons, and they don't know that I'm teaching them lessons, and that's a good thing a lot, right?
Well, I just want to thank you both for sharing your stories. I think, you know, there are a lot of people like yourselves who didn't know the people who were helped, and by sharing your story, I'm sure there are other people out there like you who have been afraid to ask. They didn't, afraid how they might be treated. Hopefully help them out. And Eastern Illinois Food Bank has been a great organization in helping to spread that word of what's available, but also, you know, what people who are going through this have to live on. And I think pretty much every year you've done a food challenge.
Oh, it's going to happen in September. You'll be getting a letter.
So it's something I participated in a few years ago. It's a difficult challenge, but it might be something you might want to look at.
What is it?
During the third week in September, we ask people who support us to take the SNAP challenge and live for a week on the same money an individual would be if they only lived on their SNAP income. This year, it got raised to $5 a day that you try to eat on $5 a day. Senator Frakes participated with me 1 year, and I've done it every year. I'm going to do it again this year. And if you can't do it for the entire week, we ask to do it for a day or so. And just put yourself in that position. What you find out is you're obsessed with planning to eat, because how am I going to make it work? As these folks can tell you that becomes your daily routine is figuring out what we're going to do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I recall the first time I did it, I had set aside an apple for my lunch the next day, and I finished dinner, and I wanted to eat the apple, and I realized if I did, I wouldn't have lunch. And I said, how many people do that every day? So I'll send you a little letter of explain the program, because Senator Frakes and I think we're trying to do it again this year.
SNAP diet.
A SNAP diet. Well, SNAP. Yeah, it is. Very good. I was going to mention about the SNAP program. Jessica works at the food bank through our SNAP outreach program. And that program we began in April, and it is amazing the number of individuals. And as a result of that, we brought in over $500,000 into the local economy through SNAP. Because, you know, SNAP doesn't just provide food for the recipient or for the client with the link card. It puts $1.73 into the local economy for every dollar that's spent.
Great.
So it's its own stimulus.
Good.
And I think having somebody like Jessica, kind of a cheerleader / counselor, to help steer people through the paperwork, through just some of the boundaries that get put up by agencies, maybe unintentionally, but I know many of our clients have really appreciated somebody just saying, this is the next thing to do. You know, helping them fill out forms or helping them access an internet if they don't have a computer at home. Those things really make a difference without a large amount of cost. But most of us, when we're facing something difficult, need that cheerleader or encourager or somebody to bounce ideas off of during a process that's confusing like that.
I think that message came through pretty clearly from Terry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It made a difference.
Let's open it up to any questions the press might have if they'd like to follow through. The president added more money to the SNAP program because of the recession in his stimulus bill, and that has come to an end. And so there aren't as many resources available for SNAP, which was traditionally known as a food stamp program. Now we're going into a second round of spending cuts, and I'm concerned, and it's the reason I really called folks together today, that we don't go too far in cutting the safety net for families across America who are going through difficult times. Some are even working going through difficult times, which is an important point to make. And so my hope is that as we look for ways to cut spending, we don't do it at the expense of feeding children and families that are struggling. And I hope that we can all agree, both parties can agree, on a good starting point there to preserve the safety net. Any other questions?
Yes, would you mind talking, it's related, but your thoughts on super spending, what you hope to do through that process, and your thoughts about the people who are appointed?
Well, there are good people appointed, and the question is now whether they'll do good things. Okay. There have been good people appointed to the super committee, and now the question is whether they can do good things, and that'll mean working together and compromising. That is not a dirty word. In Washington, it's the only way to get things done. And we've seen that when we just deal with confrontation and hostage-taking politically and that sort of thing, it isn't good for the country. And I think most Americans have a very low opinion of Congress today because there's been too much of that. In the months to come, when we return, I hope the Super Committee can put together a bipartisan approach which does reduce our deficit in a sensible way, preserve the safety net that we've talked about today, make sure that we don't cut things that are critical for creating jobs and putting people back to work, and then let's make sure that it's balanced across the board, that we look at all the government programs rather than just a small slice of them and take all the cuts there. I hope that happens. It remains to be seen, but maybe the Standard & Poor's rating is a wake-up call for all of us in Washington to get this act together, get America back at AAA status, and to do what it takes.
Senator, although you certainly don't want to see safety cuts take the brunt of the cuts, many marginal groups have noted that eventually Medicare and Medicaid spending will have to be reined in and it's not sustainable at the rate it's at now.
First, Medicaid is a special case as far as I'm concerned. One-third of the children in America have Medicaid as their health insurance. 52% of all the babies born in Illinois are born under the Medicaid program. And 20% of the Medicaid recipients, mainly elderly people living in nursing homes, account for 68% of all Medicaid spending in Illinois. So when you say cut back in Medicaid, you say, well, that means fewer children will be covered, fewer women will get prenatal care before they give birth to a baby, and fewer seniors can stay in nursing homes because the money isn't there to sustain that. So those are choices that I think are wrong. We've got to sustain Medicaid, particularly now with our weak economy and with state budgets, as Senator Frerichs can tell you, strained. We've got to help all that we can out of Washington. Now, Medicare is a vastly important program. 40 million Americans, mainly senior citizens, count on it for their health insurance. And it goes up not only in terms of cost each year, but the number of people, as the baby boomers arrive, covered by Medicare, gets larger and larger. There are ways to save money in Medicare. We can have competitive bidding for pharmaceuticals under Medicare, which can reduce the unit cost and not compromise quality. It means the pharmaceutical companies may not make as much in profit, but at this time, asking them to sacrifice to keep this program alive, I think, is a reasonable thing to do. We have to look at health care. You can't get to good deficit reduction without it, but I hope we don't go into Medicaid. I think that would be a serious problem if we did. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
You would just say leave that program alone.
I would say in Medicaid, there are ways to save money there, but be careful. The people covered by Medicaid are the most vulnerable people in America. You know, what are you going to do if your mom or grandmother faces being taken away from a good, safe environment where she's living, in a convalescent center or a nursing home? You just don't want that to happen. So we've got to find ways to do something sensible in reducing costs, but not at the expense of the most vulnerable people in America. What, Mike?
Any cuts in Social Security or Medicare right now is terrifying.
Yep.
For 3 years, we haven't had any increase at all while the cost of living has gone through the roof.
Yep.
We're just scraping by now without the link card and being able to use it at the farmer's market. I wouldn't be able to afford fresh vegetables at all.
What Mike is saying is that the Social Security for many families, and yours is a classic example, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and for a lot of families, when you talk about any cuts in Social Security, it's cut in real income, and which is mainly just getting by, you know, at this point.
For 50 years, I tried saving for retirement, and I invested and took advice from professionals at Morgan Stanley. I did what they told me to do. It's all gone.
Yep. And this last week, a lot of people have taken a hit in their savings and retirement, too.
But one of my pet peeves is the fact that they're blaming us baby boomers for Social Security being in the shape that it's in. Well, they've only known about baby boomers for 65 years. Why haven't they done anything? Haven't they done anything to shore up Social Security?
Well, what we did in 1983 was to change Social Security because they saw us coming, Mike. You and I are about the same age. And so we bought 53 years of solvency for Social Security, and it runs out 25 years from now. And the question is, what happens then? What do we do today to make sure that it's still there for Mike and Terry and everyone else who's here? And we've got to do that because I think people are realizing more and more that you can't count on the pension. The company could go bankrupt. You can't count on your investments because a bad week in the stock market may rip you up pretty bad. So you better have Social Security as kind of the one thing you can count on. And I believe that we've got to keep that promise.
Right. Thank you.
Can I take us back to make a point about Medicaid?
Sure.
I work full-time for the school district. Love my job. But a couple of years ago, I got a call from our personnel department, our benefits department, and said, we have to get you and your children on All Kids, or you won't be able to work for us because you will owe us money for health care. It would take so much out of my paycheck that I couldn't survive. And so I applied, didn't think I would get it, and we were approved. If I hadn't had that approval, then we wouldn't be covered. I probably wouldn't have a job. So I'd also be looking for a job and being needing more assistance if I didn't have that assistance. And I was happy with that assistance. I thought, that's all I need. I'm just happy with that. But I have a daughter that has severe food allergies and asthma and eye problems and a very active son. And to buy my daughter's EpiPens and inhalers and any other meds that they need, I couldn't do that on my own. And then if I was employed, unemployed because I couldn't afford to work for them, that's just another problem adding to the economy. So we're grateful. We're grateful for that. And I was thrilled to have it. But it's another thing that makes a difference in our lives. If my daughter has an episode because she tested something at Walmart, you know, tasted something at Costco or something like that, and we didn't know there were nuts in it, I'd be calling an ambulance and using an EpiPen, and how would I pay for that? And the first thing on the top of my mind shouldn't be, oh my God, how am I going to pay the medical bills? And All Kids has given me a peace of mind that that I wouldn't have.
I'm sure that's tough, Mike, from a budget viewpoint, because we've extended Medicaid coverage to children in the state. And I know that with your budget problems, you know, you've had to face this.
Yeah, it's something that is under attack. We've passed a tax increase this year in order to minimize some of those cuts for needed services and for great programs like this. But there's still great pressure out there, and it's going to be very difficult going forward as our healthcare costs go up, as our pension benefits or our pension costs go up. It's going to be very difficult times. But thanks so much for sharing that story. Mm-hmm. Something I hope to share with some of my colleagues who are attacking this program.
Anything else? Well, the problem is that there is a looming over this super committee, joint committee, is the prospect that if they fail, some terrible things happen. Even deeper cuts in non-defense domestic discretionary spending, which goes right to the issues we're talking about here, and pretty substantial cuts when it comes to the military and veterans affairs. So it's not a good outcome. I have felt for a long time the only honest way to deal with this is to put everything on the table in a balanced approach. That includes revenue, which I think is important. I think the wealthiest, most comfortable families in America should be asked to sacrifice. Everybody is at this point because of the economy. And paying a little more in taxes on their part and maybe a way to come up with the money to avoid these deep, deep cuts that could hurt the safety net. Okay? Thanks, everybody.